Take your hands off that mute button, because the Lotus Effect is coming up next.
This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, I have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about. But anyway, I'm Phone Boy, and this is episode 191 of The Lotus Effect, which we call Days of Our Highs. Yeah, you know, I don't know. This show, it's made up. The content just doesn't matter. And, you know, I've got to find that. Where am I? I know I am Phone Boy. That much I do know.
As they say, folks, go Google that shit.
And I Googled it.
My suspicions are confirmed.
He's a douchebag. But he's also my podcast partner in crime. I love him to bits, and I'm Phoenix.
Yeah, and obviously having a great goddamn time here. We have to welcome our Apple Podcasts and Spotify listeners. We actually are getting people listening on Spotify. Not a ton of people, but
hey, but it's something.
Something, yeah. But, you know, we are branching out now. I think we're getting our stuff out there now. There's a lot of stuff going on right now, and I'm got to admit, I'm freaked out.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
Sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Oh, yeah, we're freaking out here. But and because, you know, and sometimes we freak out differently because, well, the Lotus affects everyone differently. So however and wherever the Lotus is touching you currently, we want to hear about it.
I got mail. Yay.
I got you a dollar.
Yeah, we invest a lot of time in putting this show together, and we operate on that value-for-value model that we all know and love. Consists of those three T's of time, talent, and treasure. Now, you can send us the treasure, although that's not our focus here, but you go to lotuseffect.show and click on that green We Like Money button and send us some cash via PayPal, or if you're into Cash App, you can use $ the Lotus Effect 33, and that will also get it to us. Now, you can also visit our merch shop at lotuseffect.shop, where you can buy our crap that's been smeared with our brand feces. Mama did that. She bought a new mouse pad. And
yeah, we'll have to ask her how she likes it.
That's right. You can also set up a one-time donation there if you wish. Now we also have we have people that have set up monthly donations, and for this week we have our monthly donation from Sharky, which Bell fail. That's what that is.
There was a sticky note in the bell.
And I have to play. And
it's beautiful.
Because he was the highest monetary donation.
Oh, you the executive producer.
That's why. Yeah, and we appreciate Sharky.
So like I said, we're not big on the money, so it doesn't upset us that you may not have the scratch to send us cash. We're totally cool with that. But we just want to make sure that the investment we make in putting this show together is actually valuable, right? And what we actually find the most valuable is just letting us know you're listening. Send us back the ack, right? So there's ways you can do that. Yeah, you got to. Yeah, if you use a podcast app, right, you can subscribe to the podcast. That's one way you can do that. And of course, you can also, you know, find and follow, rate and review, and all that other social bullshit that they tell you to do. And you know, and all those YouTube or TikTok, you know, subscribe and share. You know, share and enjoy. All right, yes, but we actually do exist in Apple Podcasts and Spotify or any place you want to attack an RSS feed. Yeah, you can do that, right? Right. So, let us know you're listening, right? And all of that. But you can also.
We like it when you hit us up on
Mastodon. Mastodon.
Yes. You can hit us up on the Massive Dong. Our handles, mine is phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. My partner here is Phoenix, PHEONIX at lotuseffect.social. You can send a message there and let us know. You can also send us an email. I don't give a fuck at lotuseffect.show. And yeah, if you want something less offensive, maybe I'll set up something else. I keep forgetting to do that. You can also join us in the chat. This is actually we love. This is what we love when we're doing either rideshare radio or actually 2.5 bends, right?
That's right, like we did last night.
Which we did last night. So this is Fridays at, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, or during the Lotus Effect and Studio 33 Saturdays starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central. Right? You can go to and. You can of course join the chat if you're one of those dudes named Ben or Bernadette, if you know how to use an IRC client. Yeah, you can do that, or you can use one of the web-based alternatives. All the details are on lotuseffect.chat. Now you can also call us or text us at 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, Google Voice answers the phone, and yeah, who knows what that's going to turn into. But it might turn into it because it does such a wonderful job mangling transcripts and that kind of thing. We actually do like what it kind of. Sometimes it's funny, and we turn it into show titles, right? So, but this is what. Yeah, and you can also do what Dame Bemrose did last night. She texted us pictures of the cats and the bird and the asshole birds and all the other stuff that she
did.
That
is phenomenal. Yeah. We love Dame Bemrose and her contributions.
Yes. And this is, I think she sent us this morning. This is I think we need to actually put this in the chat for her.
Yes. I think these are wonderful.
Yes. I think we shared all of these last night, when we were doing the after party for 2.5 bends. By the way, I should probably, even though this is not probably the time to talk about that. Yeah. We actually 2.5 bends has its own website now. So you go to 2.5bends.com if you want to get in on that. I'm not posting the second episode to the Lotus Effect stream. I don't feel the need to do that. But anyway, now you could also, this is one of the ways you can call and let us know all kinds of stuff, right? And one of the things we'd like to hear from you is our weekly weigh-in topic, right? And this week, we're going to ask you to weigh in on your favorite summer festival, right? And however you define a festival, however you define summer, however you define favorite, you know?
Yeah, it's really loose boundaries.
Exactly. So, but the point is that you can call or text your memes to 253-237-3321. And then once you've done that, listen to what Dr. Johnny Fever has to say.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Yeah, but we're not taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit. The only shit Phoneboy takes is when I give it to him.
That's
and
right.
Vice versa. So be respectful. Don't be dumb. We actually have a last call story about somebody famous being dumb when it comes to the respectful, don't be an anti-Semitic idiot. But anyways, we're not going to talk about that because people are counting on us. Are they not, Phoneboy?
Leslie Nielsen, what do you have to say?
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yes. And the pedal heads are counting on us too. So I think we have to start by going to the health segment, right? That is because the health segment is never, ever, ever
brought to you by Pfizer.
Yeah, well, Pfizer did not answer this question. What is it about eating more protein that might prevent muscle loss from GLP-1 drugs?
One of the studies that just came out about Ozempic and Wegovy and those things is that you are, and I don't know the right word for this, but you are losing muscle even more than fat. So you're losing your lean body mass, right? Catabolizing.
A couple of different doctors have come out recently. I just had, if you go back a couple of weeks, folks, I had Dr. DietDoctor.com.
Ian Felt. Brett Scher.
No, Ian Felt. Ian Felt was on the show, and he said that is they're proving now that people who eat, who take Wegovy and all this different stuff, they're losing more muscle mass than other people. This is a fact.
And what I'm saying is, so you say that, that would be crazy to say, let's lose muscle. I've got too much muscle. And yet people want the fast weight loss so badly, they'll projectile vomit and shit their pants and lose muscle by taking Wegovy and Ozempic. So tell me how disconnected we are from logic, sanity, and reality.
No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot how long that clip was, but yeah, that pretty much, it's kind of, yeah, of course, yeah. So eating Ozempic, consuming Ozempic, probably.
I was going to say, eating Ozempic? Really? Yeah.
Ozempic is eating you, apparently. But
yes.
So researchers at the Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School of Boston, oh my God, these places, offered this advice in a new study presented on July 12th at the Endo 2025, the Endocrine Society's annual meeting in San Francisco. I wonder if Dr. Robert Lustig was there, because that's where he's out of. The report described a small study of 40 people who lost weight with semaglutide compared to those who lost weight through a conventional diet and exercise program. Now, did they have the same N to match, or was this asymmetrical? Like their lopsided results, they ballast with inflated findings and scientific mumbo jumbo. Yeah, well, they got a lot of that. Yeah. Now, after 3 months, the semaglutide group lost more weight than the conventional group. Now, the percentage of weight loss that was lean muscle mass was similar between the two groups.
Tell me this is not a crock of shit.
Yeah. Well, participants receiving semaglutide who lost more muscle mass than others were either older adults, females, or those who ate less protein while following a weight loss protocol. Yeah, again, we're blaming the fucking, you know, the dieter, of course. Other adults and women may be more likely to lose muscle on semaglutide, but eating more protein may help protect against this, lead researcher Melanie Haynes, MD, a neuroendocrinologist with Massachusetts General Hospital, said in a news release.
You have a firm grasp of the obvious.
Okay, so while promising, these results have not yet been published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal and may warrant further investigation. So why the fuck are you reporting on this? Now, there's a whole section of this article that can be summed up in one sentence. If GLP-1 drugs act like Ozempic, suppress your appetite, you'll eat less and therefore eat less protein.
You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
And then the article says, eat more protein and build muscle through strength and resistance training programs. Now, and of course, now it suggests shit sources of protein. We here at the Lotus Effect say,
eat steak, eat steak, eat a big old steer.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah, that would,
beef.
We have beef. That's
we
dinner.
Have beef.
Okay.
We do have beef.
Yes. Yeah, so this is just one of these articles. You just kind of, it's like why? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You shouldn't be having any, like, anyway, I'm not going there. I'm so frustrated by these stories when we go through them. It's like they keep trying to feed the same shit over and over again and it doesn't work. It's kind of like the Democrats and their strategy of trying to, it's like, how's that worked for you? You motherfuckers. Anyway.
Wow, we're getting some fantastic phone boy rants early on today. Hopefully this won't incite a rant, or maybe we are hoping it will, because we're going to talk about what really happens to your body when you eat more protein than carbs.
When you take in a complex carbohydrate, you get what's called a glycogen load. So your glucose spikes and it stays up. So your body, your pituitary sends, you know, hey, we need to get some insulin down there. We need to work on this. And it has to keep pumping insulin, not for 20 minutes, not for 30 minutes, but it could be hours. It can be hours that, you know, and this is supposed to be the healthier.
There's your heart healthy grains with the mesa of insulin just continuously being pumped.
And what happens when your insulin stays up for hours and hours and hours is turning all of that sugar into long chain triglycerides, storing it as fats. Somehow my great grandmother from Italy knew this. If you eat too many grains, you will get fat. This is not new information. My great grandmother, who spoke very little English, knew this.
That's funny that you say that, because my grandmother, who spoke very little English, also said that too. She would always tell the kids, don't have too much pasta. You need to have more meat from Italy, from Puglia.
Yeah. Okay. So the carbohydrates, right? You have to, we're talking about carbohydrates.
Yes, because they're your body's go-to energy source, especially for your brain and during workouts. And that's because they can be most easily converted into sugar or glucose, like what Anna was talking about. So while protein can be converted into glucose and used for energy, that process is slower and less efficient. It's primarily meant for muscle building and tissue repair. Now, fat can be burned for fuel too, producing ketones instead of glucose. And it typically occurs when you cut carbs drastically on a very low carb or keto style diet.
Give us a week, we'll take off the weight.
The amount of carbs you need depends on how fat adapted you are and the amount of exercise you do. However, many ultra marathoners are actually low carb and do quite well on almost no carbs. The short-term effects of going low-carb, according to this article, are you might feel fuller longer, or rather, you're not constantly hungry.
You're not you when you're hungry.
You might have more steady energy, but less pep. Yeah, your blood sugar's more steady, too. Your digestion could slow way down. Foam Boys certainly has not. The article cites some long-term benefits as well. Muscle maintenance and growth, and fat loss. This is especially true when you pair it with exercise, specifically resistance training. Let's get physical, physical. I wanna get physical. Now, you'll also probably see a blood sugar regulation. Reducing your carb intake can help lessen blood sugar spikes. Increasing your insulin sensitivity, that is key to helping manage or prevent type 2 diabetes or other metabolic issues. And the article doesn't claim that not eating so much fiber is bad, although carnivores would generally disagree with that. There's some vague threat about too much protein in the kidneys. Now, you know, the body can also convert excess protein into glucose, a fact that is not in the article.
Shut up already. Science.
Yeah, so this is
it was a bullshit article, basically.
Yeah, well, the health articles are anymore getting, they're just kind of bullshit, like nobody actually, like no real good stuff out there, but yeah, I think that you can eat nothing with impunity, right? And that is something that does happen. If you eat, you want to eat enough to be able to sort of keep your muscle mass going and building, right? And that certainly as you get older, that's something we got to worry about. But yeah, if you eat too much of it, that is something. It gets turned into something. So that is, and there are some people that actually does happen for, right? That's called not eating too much food. Period. Done, right? I mean, you'd have to, I think, in order to eat enough for that to be a problem, you'd have to be eating well above and beyond what you probably should be eating anyway. But now we go to the next one here. This one.
This is just a trigger heavy health segment.
Yes, seed oils aren't the problem. How we consume them is.
And they are the worst of the worst because they contain, when you cook foods with these oils, you generate serious cancer-causing, mitochondria-destroying, nerve cell-damaging toxins like acrylamide and 4-hydroxynonenal. And all of these are a category of toxin that when you combine them all together, they're the same category of toxin, I should say, that makes cigarettes smoked.
Yeah, and so the American Heart Association wants people to know that there's no reason to avoid seed oils and plenty of reasons to eat them. But some media headlines and social media influencers will ask you to believe otherwise. Well, gee, why would they believe that?
In 1948, the American Heart Association, which is really just an association of cardiologists, right? Remember, heart disease is new. Tiny little association. Yeah. They barely had an office. They were just like, they barely had any funds. Procter & Gamble comes in and says, we're going to make you the designee of this radio show for a week. And it was this huge deal. Overnight, literally, according to the official history of the American Heart Association, they said millions of dollars flowed into our coffers. We became overnight the powerhouse, opening offices all across the country that we are today. They're still the number one largest non-for-profit in the country.
Amazing.
All thanks to Procter & Gamble. And pretty soon thereafter, they started to recommend that you start eating vegetable oils to prevent a heart attack.
Mm-hmm. Which was the worst idea, because it turns out that trans fats, everybody agrees in this, have killed hundreds of thousands, millions of people over the decades.
Yeah. So the fact that they're cozy with the very company that figured out how to actually create this shit that they're now, that used to be, it's an industrial waste product. They figured out how to turn it into something that humans would eat, right? I mean, so maybe the American Heart Association is a little suspect. Maybe we shouldn't be listening to what they have to say. So anyway, now in this article, I'm going to skip all the pro seed oil propaganda in the article and go right for the real question. If seed oils are the healthier option, why are they getting such negative attention in the media? The industry shill responded thus. The problem is not necessarily the seed oils or the hateful eight, as they've been described by Dr. Kate Shanahan, the clip we played earlier. It's that they're just one of many ingredients found in ultra-processed foods.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
So if you're consuming a diet high in ultra-processed foods, you are likely consuming more seed oils as well as several other ingredients like refined carbohydrates, added sugar, salt, additives, and stabilizers, a combination that's often associated with a higher risk of adverse health outcomes. The real problem is that we're not getting enough omega-3 fatty acids in our diet.
You're shitting me.
Then the expert doubles down as if that wasn't bad enough. Omega-3 fatty acids are essential, meaning our body cannot make them in sufficient quantities to meet our needs, so we need to get them from food sources. They're an important component of our cell membranes, especially those found in our eyes and brain, and play a vital role in the functions of the cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, and endocrine systems.
What the hell did he say?
Same as usual, not a damn thing.
Now, I'm not a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine. I'm just some douchebag on the internet. But my brain sees it this way. If we got to this point in our evolutionary history without producing enough of these antioxidants on our own, maybe the issue isn't a lack of omega-3 fatty acids. Maybe it's the fact that the modern diet is so damn inflammatory that we need all those omega-3s. I don't know, just saying.
Gee, how dare you be so controversial as to imply that it's the shit food that they're shoving down our throats that's causing us to have to take these supplements instead of eating like we were meant to eat, carnivorously, omnivorously, if you will, and in season, and all the things you hear us talk about here on The Lotus Effect all the time, unless you're a new listener. This story really is for me. Are we good with all of the propaganda from the food corporations now for a while?
Yes, I think so.
All right, because I'm kind of getting a little pissy. And, you know, when your brain, you want to know what your brain on revenge looks like? Yeah, it looks a lot like your brain on drugs. And, yeah, there's only one twisted way to get that fix.
This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
It was a mercy killing.
That's right. Revenge is an act designed to inflict harm on someone because they've inflicted harm on us. We could yearn for anything after we've been mistreated, like a scoop of ice cream, a nap, or a relaxing massage. But what most of us really want is the other person's pain, and for them to know that their pain is because of the pain that they have caused us.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Now, the desire for revenge is root motivation for almost all forms of human violence. From childhood bullying to intimate partner violence, urban violence, police brutality, mass shootings, violent extremism, genocide, and even war. Perpetrators of violence almost always believe they're victims seeking justice.
Take it easy, fuckhead.
Recent neuroscience discoveries reveal a chilling picture. Your brain on revenge looks a lot like your brain on drugs. Brain imaging studies show that grievances, real or imagined, perceptions of injustice, disrespect, betrayal, shame, or victimization activate the pain network, specifically the anterior insula. The brain doesn't like pain and tries to rebalance itself with pleasure. Pleasure can come from many things, but humans have evolved to feel intense pleasure from hurting the people who hurt us or their proxies.
We need to kill them.
We need to kill them.
Over the past two decades, more than 60 neuroscientists at universities around the world have conducted brain scan studies demonstrating that when you've been wronged and begin to think about retaliating, the brain's pleasure and reward circuitry of addiction awakens. The nucleus accumbens, associated with cravings, and the dorsal stratum, associated with habit formation, spool up just as they do when drug addicts experience stress or see a place they connect with getting high.
Goddamn too high, high, god, goddamn too high, goddamn too high.
Dopamine levels appear to surge and crash, producing the familiar sensation of craving. But unlike other addictions, to gratify revenge cravings, you've got to hurt the people who hurt you, or again, their proxies. And when you do, you experience pleasure for a while. But then, as with other addictions, the pain returns with a vengeance, leaving you feeling worse but wanting more. It may also expose you to other people's revenge cravings to hurt you and leave a trail of wounded people in your wake.
Somebody gonna get hurt real bad.
So, wanting revenge when you've been wronged is natural and is believed to have evolved as an adaptive strategy. But in modern societies, people often seek revenge for injuries like wounded egos that have little to do with survival or procreation. And if the prefrontal cortex, the area of your brain responsible for executive function and self-control, is hijacked or inhibited, then you might seek revenge for pleasure despite the negative consequences to others or yourself, like the destruction of families, careers, and other valuable relationships, and the perpetration of psychological and physical violence. That's the common definition of addiction, the inability to resist powerful urges despite the negative consequences. Now, while we're sure this could easily be turned into something that could be treated with drugs...
Drugs? I'm not taking any drugs.
Yeah, the article doesn't tell us that neuroscientists have discovered a different, more potent, and widely available remedy for revenge right inside our own brains. Forgiveness. Researchers conducting fMRI brain studies have discovered that when you simply imagine forgiving a grievance without even informing the transgressor, you deactivate your brain's pain network, the anterior ancilla, stopping rather than merely covering up the pain of the grievance.
Goosefraba.
You also shut down the nucleus accumbens and dorsal stratum, the brain's pleasure and reward circuitry, which stops intrusive revenge desires. Finally, you activate your prefrontal cortex, restoring executive function and self-control so you can make decisions that are in your own interest. In other words, neuroscience shows us that forgiveness is sort of a wonder drug that stops pain, stops revenge craving, restores rational thinking, and helps set you free from the wrongs and traumas of the past.
And the truth shall set you free!
On top of that, it's free. Available without a prescription, and you can use it as often as needed to lessen your pain and revenge fantasies, whenever memories of a grievance return. Now, some scientific evidence supporting the ancient forgiveness teachings of Jesus and the Buddha.
I'm hot, the teacher.
That's right, forgiveness is a form of self-healing that benefits victims, not perpetrators, and you can do it without being forced to accept or endorse what happened to you, and all while preserving your right to defend yourself from present or future threats. It's really simple. Just be more peaceful, like the Buddha.
I suppose, yes. Let it go. I mean, yes, it is. Yeah, it does make life a lot easier. I can say that.
But I mean, I can also see the other side of that, that sometimes letting it go is more difficult than others.
Yes, it is. Yeah, because
I mean, this article makes it sound like it's just so simple. Like, angry, and now I just forgive you. Gring.
Here's the thing. It's simple. It's simple in theory, but yeah, it's. it's a simple concept, but actually doing it. Yeah, you're right. It's a simple concept, but it's not simple to do, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? I'm pretty happy right now. I don't know about you.
Me too.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you. All right. We have something about a rare wild baby horse, because it got adopted by a domestic pony that just lost her own foal.
Mom! 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 Mommy! 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 Mama! Mama!
Yeah. This story of resistance and maternal instinct now comes from Minnesotanuts, of all places, where a foal belonging to Asia's last remaining wild horse species is thriving thanks to an unexpected hero, a domesticated horse named Alice.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Yes, having lost her own offspring, Alice decided to put Marat, the months-old Przewalski's horse foal, between her and her hooves. Born May 17th at the Minnesota Zoo, the male foal is the result of a decades-long commitment to saving the endangered Przewalski's horse, which over the last 15 years has progressed remarkably well. Just days after his birth, the foal became critically ill and was transferred to the University of Minnesota's Veterinary Medical Center. While he made a full recovery, the temporary separation led his mother, Nadi, to reject him, a behavior not uncommon among wild horses after separation.
Get out of my vagina!
Now, enter Alice, a gentle pony of the America's mare from Brush Poppin' Ranch in southeastern Minnesota. Just days earlier, Alice had lost her own newborn filly. Her owners, Sylvia and Jeff Passo, hoped her nurturing temperament and milk supply might help another foal in need. Now, within hours of hearing about the orphaned wild foal, the Passos made the drive to the Minnesota Zoo. From their first meeting, Alice accepted Marat as her own, nuzzling him gently and allowing him to nurse.
Milk. It does a body good.
Now, the two have formed a heartwarming bond, and Alice will remain by his side for the next several months as he continues to grow. Przewalski's horses are the world's last truly wild horse species, never domesticated and genetically distinct from other horses. Once declared extinct in the wild by the 1960s, the species survived only through a small number of individuals in zoos.
I believe in miracles!
Through decades of careful breeding, international cooperation, and scientific breakthroughs, including recent genetic research and cloning efforts, populations have been reestablished on the steppes of Mongolia and China. Fewer than 2,000 Przewalski's horses exist today, making each foal born in human care critical to the species' survival. Yeah, I thought we hated the fucking Bee Gees, but anyway, that's...
No, it's just simply fuck the Bee Gees.
Okay, well,
there's not anything about hating them.
Okay, well, anyway.
Well, not on our part, anyway.
Yeah, anyway, however, that's a great story of, you know, this...
It is. I love horses.
I also love this next story,
so that made
too.
Me really happy. Yes, this next story just makes me giggle, because, you know, love conquers the Atlantic, because a Newfoundland... I always want to pronounce that wrong. A Newfoundland couple's message in a bottle was found in Ireland 13 years later.
I hope that someone gets my message in a bottle, yeah.
From the shores of Newfoundland to the shores of Ireland comes the story of two young lovers frozen in time within the blue glass of a wine bottle. Separated by 5 time zones, 1,800 miles, and 13 years, the humble message in a bottle proves once again to have a unique power for connecting human beings.
More human than human is our motto.
It was 2012, and Brad and Anita were enjoying a picnic on Belle Island off the coast in Newfoundland. The long-distance daters then got the idea to write a letter and stuff it in the wine bottle they had just emptied.
And if they want to drink Merlot, we're drinking Merlot.
No, if anybody orders Merlot, I'm leaving. I am not drinking any fucking Merlot!
So, today, we enjoyed dinner. This bottle of wine and each other on the edge of the island, Anita wrote. Brad, then a greenhorn police officer, stood up and gave it all he had into the waters of Conception Bay, unsure if it cleared the rocks. On July 7th, according to the Canada Press, the bottle was found by Kate and John Gay on the Meharry's Peninsula in southwest Ireland, over 1,800 miles away. That night, they broke it open with members of their local conservation society, read the letter out loud, and hurried to get in touch with the authors.
Your true love lives!
Less than an hour later, a local named Martha Farrell confirmed to the Maharis Conservation Association that, according to the text message she had just received, Brad and Anita were still in love, but were now married with three children.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage.
And then I said, yay, love conquers all, and the Atlantic Ocean, Farrell said in an interview. The Squires were married in 2016, and next year will celebrate their 10th wedding anniversary alongside their two teens and younger child. The Maharis Conservation Association, co-founded by Farrell in 2016, is also celebrating its 10th anniversary next year. Anita and I both feel like we have new friends, and we're all equally amazed, Brad Squires told Canada Press. I guess we have some people to visit and a trip to probably plan.
Oh, there's no winning. We don't like to foster a competitive atmosphere, but we laugh a lot. Now everyone hug and share a secret.
We have a trip to talk about. We'll do that in the tail of the toast and jam.
In the toast and jam.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it's time for the I think it's for that. It's that time where we actually go into the cavalcade of stupidity.
Hi-dee ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. And since I'm MIA, here's Phone Boy to take over.
Yeah, so Rev is I don't know what Rev's busy right now. That's all I know right now. But anyway, so we of course here have our own our own sort of stand-in for that. We've actually had this gentleman before, James Barry Poole, born December 18, 1964, an American country music artist who records under the name Cletus T. Judd, known primarily for his parodies of popular country songs. He has been called the Weird Al Yankovic of country music, and his albums are usually an equal mix of original comedy songs and parodies. Judd has released 11 studio albums and 2 EPs, and several singles have entered the Billboard Hot Country Singles song charts. Now, his chart peak is the number 48, I Love NASCAR, a parody of Toby Keith's 2003 single, I Love This Bar. Now, so this particular track comes from the year 2000 from his 5th album entitled Just Another Day in Parodies. It's a parody of Kenny Chesney's 1999 single, She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy, which referenced Chesney's and McGraw's 2000 arrest for stealing a mounted reserve officer's horse.
I know that story. I remember that story. It was a fantastic story and hilarious at the same time.
Yes. Meanwhile, so we're going to play the track. It's called My Cellmate Thinks I'm Sexy.
Lordy, sure could run. Well, I got a butt kicking when the police finally caught me.
Give me back my horse!
Not a moment too soon, Tim McGraw jumped in, did his best. Jackie Chan caught a cop on the chin. Now I don't understand why they's arresting me. My cellmate thinks I'm sexy.
Well, yeah, we gotta keep it shorter because Spotify. Anyway,
yeah, gotta play by the rules.
We gotta play by the
rules.
But
of course, we are definitely gonna play that and the song that it parodied in Studio 33. So you're gonna want to hang out for that.
Yes. Okay. So apparently, this is the part of the show where it's the Tales from Rideshare segment.
Yes, not a lot of people took that ride because Phoenix didn't work a lot this week. It was kind of a wild, crazy week that started with getting an oil change done on my car. And ended with going to a tomato festival and getting a sunburn and some awesome things, et cetera, that we will talk about in none other than the Toast and Jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
Oh, yeah. And you know, we want to hear what y'all have to say about your favorite summer festival, which we're going to talk about ours. So you should probably call 253-237-3321 and tell us all about what your favorite summer festival is. And I know you're probably curious about what I'm cooking this evening.
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
I'm actually kind of doing a leftover thing. I'm going to heat up some hearts of palm rice and put this beef dish that I just kind of came up with off the cuff. I took some beef broth and slow cooked in the oven with onions, red onions in fact, and quartered mushrooms. I put a sachet of fresh rosemary and thyme in this cheesecloth bundle, and it was beef broth I had made because that's how I roll. And it all cooked down nicely and slowly in the oven until it was nice and thick. And we're going to put that over some rice for dinner tonight. I'm not really sure what you would call it. We'll find something to place in the script as a marker for what we call it. But I'm just going to call it dinner. And it's definitely going to be...
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
So some night this week, and I can't even remember which night it was this week at this point because it's all been kind of a blur. I'm exhausted. And you come to me and say, hey... How would you like to go on a cruise?
It was a stoned thought that I turned into a semi-reality by asking that question.
Yes. And at that point I said, honey, I'm about to fall asleep. I can't have this conversation right now. And I think about 5 seconds later I was out like a fucking light.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. So the next morning we get up and this you bring this idea back to me.
Yeah, I was not letting this go. I was like a puppy with a chewy toy. I wasn't letting go.
Yeah. And So you presented the dates to me and I'd already had taken, I'd already had scheduled a week off. So I had scheduled some time off for, we'd had some provisional plans to do some stuff earlier this year. So I'd kind of thrown, I'd already.
Yes, we were originally supposed to head west to visit some friends and completely intoxicate me for however much time.
Yeah. Instead we're going to do so on a cruise ship. So,
I'm going to be drunk on a boat.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sitting there kind of looking at this and I'm going, okay, so, but now of course I'm sitting here looking at this and I'm going, okay, this ship that we're going to be, it's a Carnival ship. I think it has about 3,000 people on it, it has about 3,000 passengers on it. And yeah, so a lot of people in kind of a large floating hotel, I think is the best way to describe it I've never done a cruise before, right?
And you're asking me how I described it?
Yes.
Disneyland plus Vegas plus Food and Wine Week in New York. That is the best way to describe what a cruise is. It is the all-inclusive vacation where your lodging, your food, and your entertainment, majority of which are all in one place, so to speak.
Yes.
And yeah, it is not cheap by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. And then,
but it is wholly worth it.
Yeah. So in any case, that meant, okay, so we're kind of both putting money toward this goal. So, okay, now we have a cruise. So that meant, okay, so that meant some purchases had to be made of things like airline tickets and hotels and that kind of thing. So, of course, we do all of that, and now you wanted to fly in the day before, which is totally fine. I think
I have cruised before, and I know the pandemonium that goes along with doing so, worrying about if this fucking flight is going to be canceled or get there on time or whatever is the last thing that you want to do. So if going in the day earlier and just doing nothing, see the sights if you're interested in wherever you're going.
But I took it up another level because we're looking, because I said, okay, so I have to fly into Orlando because I guess we're going to
you need to look in the chat, sir. I don't usually fourth wall break, but Cotton Gin's up to some shite over here.
I wouldn't say it's a honeymoon cruise, but
no, because we're not even engaged. Hello.
But we are. But that might be something. If I like this, that might be something we do. You know, as a honeymoon. But anyway.
It's going to be a lot longer than like 5 days. I assure you, if that's the case.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway,
I think I need to talk about the etymology of it, though. It wasn't just a quote stoned thought.
No, but this is something. Okay, here. But what I will say about it before you say what you're going to say about it is this is something. You've been talking to me about cruises pretty much the entire time we've been together, right? And so I know this when you came to me and said, "Do you want to go on a cruise?" I wasn't not expecting it. I just wasn't expecting it like right then and there. You know what I mean?
Okay, so but that is exactly why I wanted to explain its etymology, because it's A, something extremely spontaneous that isn't being planned for months on end. It's literally 2 weeks and we get on a boat. It's very fast. And that's kind of what I wanted. I wanted something that was spontaneous and not rigorously thought out. Don't get me wrong. I will be extremely meticulous in making sure all the requirements are met so that it is a smooth vacation.
Yeah, the whole reason that we had fucking Amazon, like the postal lady literally backed not quite backed the truck up, but it was funny because I had walked outside to go get something out of the car. And I knew the postal lady was coming, and I knew because we'd ordered a bunch of stuff, and we'll talk about some of the stuff we ordered, but I had actually had gotten to the postal lady was literally outside, and so I knew she had packages for me, while she was delivering a package to somebody else, I'd walked over and got mail and came back over, and she handed me a bunch of boxes, right? And it was like, and I made the comment to her, I'm like, I'm sorry for all the, you know, for giving all the stuff, and actually she didn't even give me all the boxes, there was still one that was, I had to go back out and get it. Fortunately, she had realized that she had one more box for me, and she just left it outside, so good, yeah. This was our normal mail lady. Great. But yeah, we had a lot of stuff. We've had to make a lot of purchases to sort of make this trip successful because we're going to be on a boat.
Exactly. We're going to have a great time. And like I said, the whole etymology of it was the fact that I wanted to do something spontaneous, but also I know that mid August, I now have a solid date and I actually have a solid number for tuition. And I about fucking died when I looked at it last night because it's $300 more than I expected. And with going on this cruise, it shortened the amount of time I have to make sure I have all of my tuition. So it's going to be a grind over the next few weeks for sure until semester starts. But what I also considered was because when my semester ends, the amount of time that is in between the two semesters is going to fall right at holiday time and also during your busiest time of the year. And it's just not going to be a good time. I feel like once I start semester mid August, there is not going to be any breathing room for me until graduation the following May. That's just what I'm envisioning. So I wanted to have one kind of final hurrah, whoop-de-doo, and enjoy myself before I had to really tie myself down hard and make sure that I can finish strong with my studies and getting my degree. And it just was perfect. The stars and the universe aligned to offer a cruise of the length that I wanted to take to basically nowhere, you know, of substance or significance. And we can afford it because we can. And oh my gosh. So not only, okay, are we getting, because I think you started to tell this story before I kind of jumped in about the etymology of it. Not only are we getting there the day before so that we have the extra time to, you know, not worry about, oh my God, are we going to be late? Blah, blah, blah. You rented a special room at this particular hotel that is at the airport, actually. So yeah, we don't even have to leave the airport.
Yeah, so yeah, I actually did. I actually decided, okay, let's, because I saw that they had an airport hotel. I said, okay, so it's a Hyatt Regency. All right. So I looked. So we started pulling up the rooms, and you got interested in the rooms that had that you could actually see the runways on.
I love watching planes take off and land. It has always been a thrill of mine. That's one of the few joys I have when I worked the airport at Nashville, was because you can't see shit in Knoxville. But in Nashville, you can actually see some of the planes taxiing on different runways and whatnot. And it's very enjoyable. So the fact that there's actually a hotel room in Orlando that you can rent, that you can watch planes take off and land from the comfort of the air conditioning of your room, I was all in. And you couldn't
Yeah.
I couldn't bring myself to ask you to spend that kind of money, and you were like, why? Yeah, let's do.
Yeah, because I looked at this and I went, yeah, this needs to be something special. Because like you pointed out, this is the first time you and I have had it like an actual, like, real vacation where we're both, you know, we're kind of...
Yeah, because going to the Airbnb that we go to every year after your whole thing is done, that to me isn't a vacation. Not a vacation that involves other people, being a couple in public type thing. This is the first official one of those, because I also don't consider the road trip we took across the country a quote vacation.
No, that wasn't necessarily a vacation, but I mean at that point we were still kind of getting to know each other, honestly. So I wouldn't call that a vacation. This is the first time we're spending money to go somewhere. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's not like we haven't traveled before. I mean, you know, I took you to Israel, but that's different. It's a business trip.
That was a business trip.
Yeah. This is you and I are doing something on our own. And honestly, like, I sat there and I thought about it. Yeah, there's a good chance that I'm going to get overstimulated at some point during this trip. And because of the sheer number of people, food, whatever.
But that's why I got us a balcony suite where you literally can lay on the bed and watch the ocean, or you can go out on our balcony and just sit all by yourself and listen to the waves or whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do. You can disconnect from the overstimulation that is being on a cruise, because I told you in advance, this is a very overstimulating activity. I never hid that from you.
No, I know that. I can tell. I've seen enough of these commercials, right, to understand that they're... The number of things, and also, like, you were, you know, we were talking about, like, all of the things that, all of the choices that you have to make on these things. I think it's at some point during the process, I went, honey, I trust you to make the right choices here. I can't do this. Like, I just.
And we actually are pretty in agreement to how we're going to do things, because of the fact we didn't pick really significant ports of call. Two of them are like islands or resorts kind of owned by the cruise company. So it's like, yeah, who gives a flying fuck? I'm not giving you more money than I'm already giving you just to sit in a beach chair or whatever. I'm good. I'll hang out on the boat in air conditioning and continue to drink and lay in a lounger chair by a pool. I'm good. And guess what? It's not going to cost me anything extra because I've already paid for the cruise. So between that and the fact that there's just nothing really excursion-wise that interested you in any of the places that we're going, because most of it involves the water, a lot of it is expensive, and it's just not your cup of tea, and I'm not going to ask you to drink that cup of tea because it's not mine either.
Yeah, there you go. So if neither one of us want to do it, why do it, right? And considering how much money, I mean, yeah, let's talk about internet on this, because this is...
Oh my God, they must be high with how much they want.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, there is a punchline there. So, okay, so we're looking at the various options for this, because the reality is that, one of the big ideas of being on a cruise ship for me is being completely disconnected from everybody. However, let's be realistic for a second in that, okay, both of us can happily exist without the internet and probably be disconnected, you know, if it were just the two of us. Unfortunately, we have a couple things we have to kind of pay attention. We have to sort of pay attention to in case of dire emergencies, that kind of thing. And so,
yeah, and it's already been explicitly stated to the people who it needs to be stated to that the only time that you contact this number is under absolutely somebody is bleeding dead or my fucking condo's on fire or something's wrong with my cat. Significantly wrong, not just the fact that he gets hairballs, okay? Like, I don't want to hear from you all. With all due respect, love you, but I don't want any communication with the outside world. The whole reason to be on a boat in the middle of the ocean is exactly that. To be on kind of your own little island where there isn't any internet if you don't want there to be. Now, I'm not going to lie. I did get and encouraged you, so we got a two-pack, to get a waterproof case for the cell phone, because I'm not going to say there's not a part of me that won't put my waterproof earphones in and sit and listen to my music in the hot tub or something. But that's not, in my opinion, you know, connecting to the outside world. It's just listening to some music of my own choosing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. But the other, but yeah, I also have to, the work reasons, I kind of have to, I at least have to have some, like basic connection because to the mothership. Although they'll be aware I'm on a boat, I ain't doing much, right? So, but anyway, but we also figured out we might need to be able to message each other. Fortunately, the Carnival has some sort of a way to do that without having to touch the internet. So, okay, that'll probably work for like when her and I are separated and doing our different things, right? Because I can assure you we probably will have it. I'm sure there will be things that she wants to do that I don't want to do and vice versa.
But that's the beauty of being individuals,
yes,
too.
Yes, that's true. So, but anyway, so we kind of looked at it. Yeah. And I realized that everything on a cruise ship is it, but at one point we had looked at, okay, what is sort of one of the biggest internet package they have. So they have the sort of like their biggest plan, is up to, up to four devices. I guess it supports music streaming and that kind of thing. The price of that plan for one person, right. For up to four devices, right. For the length of our cruise, $420. You have to be high to want to pay that for fucking internet access.
And we're surely not.
Yeah. I mean, that's four times what my internet connection is at home, right? I mean, I pay more. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think I paid that for a half a year of phone service. I don't know. Like, I have some connection just in case, right? But I'm not going to, we're not going to sit there and carry it around and stream our life to the internet or anything like that. We're going to take some pictures and listen to some music, and that's probably it, right? That's so.
Yeah, but neither of those things, due to the ability to download what I want, affects anything when it comes to Wi-Fi. I mean, I know that they have their own Wi-Fi, but I don't know if that's the package thing we were talking about.
To be able to access, to do stuff on the cruise ship itself, right, in order to be able to order things and that kind of thing with the app.
Got it.
Yeah, that's where so there is Wi-Fi there, but anyway, so we've been kind of navigating this. By the way, none of this was something you had to deal with the last time you did it. And so, yeah, last night when we were doing 2.5 bends, yeah, this was during the after party. We were having our conversation, and we had to do the check in, right? So,
oh my God,
2 weeks
yeah.
before that, you have to get in, they're sort of like 2 weeks before
you have to set up a dock time for arrival. That way everyone doesn't arrive at the same time. And I believe they're every 30-minute intervals. But I was advised by the woman at the cruise line to literally, as soon as 12:01 Eastern time occurs on the 19th, get your dock time because, better first than last, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would much rather not be standing around in a hot cruise terminal if I can be sitting with a fucking alcoholic adult beverage in my hand on an air-conditioned cruise ship. I'm just saying.
Yeah, exactly. So now one of the things... we bought a lot... Okay, so I think we did actually buy some other stuff too. And I've been wanting to buy one of these for a while, but I bought a Zoom recorder, which I think will be helpful for future Foley work. But I also thought it might be useful to have on the plane on the cruise for us if we want to record anything that
because we do say, our life is a show and everything. So if there's some interesting conversations or something that we'd like to get on audio for future purposes, I would hope that it'll be money well spent.
Yes, it is. It has its microphones on it, but there's also you can also plug in XLR mics to it. It runs on AA batteries, and you put an SD card in it, and it'll record to the thing. And I think it'll also be its own USB audio device. I haven't played with it that much yet. This was one of the many things that showed up today. But the idea of this is that I've been wanting one of these anyway, just to be able to make it easier to do Foley work and not have to towed around our, have to bring it to our roadcaster or that kind of thing. I I did some basic tests on it. It actually seems to do okay. I mean, obviously, what I paid for it, it better be good quality. That's all I'm saying. I think I paid more for it than some of them. Definitely paid more for it than some of the microphones that we have here. But yesterday we actually did something that we hadn't done that. You actually you've done this before, right? It's something that tends to happen around that time of the year that is just another day. It is something.
This week it happened this year it happened like a week early.
Yeah, it happened a week early. But anyway, so one of the wonderful things I have discovered since moving to the great state of Tennessee and not living in the Pacific Northwest is these wonderful things called Granger County tomatoes.
Oh, they're world famous and delicious.
Yes, they're world famous and delicious. And so then they have a festival every year in Granger County where they where they're grown. And that's about 2.5 hours away from where we're at. And it's kind of on it's on the way to where the fam lives over on the other side of the mountain. And so so we had decided that we were going to go to this thing, and we had we drove out there to, and we met them along the way. We had breakfast at Waffle House. Oh my God, that was its own adventure. But anyway, then we drove up to Granger County, and yes, so there was and unfortunately, some of the stuff that they advertised was there wasn't there. There was no the blacksmithing wasn't there. They didn't have the tomato fight.
Well, again, this is
because
it's happening today and not yesterday, event wise. They held all the events until Saturday, which sucks because we didn't get to enjoy them. But we did get to enjoy some things. I mean, I got a really nice new T-shirt. I've got a slave anklet, a pair of earrings.
Yeah, that actually does. We had some fun with. Okay, so this part of this was interesting. So of course there was a lot of vendors out, and it was, by the way, it was fucking hot. I just want to point that out, just how
super hot
it was. Super hot, yeah. And so now most of the
Foamboy is officially a redneck because he got a sunburn yesterday.
Yeah, although I it doesn't hurt that much actually. It's
very mild.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, this is where not eating sugars and grains and consuming the other stuff really is helpful, because it does. When I do get sunburnt, it doesn't bother me. Right. I mean, it's like I said, it feels a little bit warm, but it's not something that I'm like, I need to have the aloe on or anything like that. But we had this problem with, so a lot of the vendors were using like Venmo or Cash App or whatever. Right. And so they were using
Square.
Yeah, they're using Square. Yeah, everybody had their little Square thing, and it seems like they don't want to do, swipe anymore. But I mean, that's Tap to Pay, of course, works, but. I had to do tech support on multiple of the vendors trying to show them how to actually use the Square app. And I never actually used the Square app myself, and at least not in years. But we were just having issues with that. And then now you wanted to buy a commemorative knife, right, for this event, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Because they have one every year.
They have one every year. And so we eventually there was no signage to figure out where this was, although we eventually found the lady, right? Now, the problem is that they only wanted cash, and unfortunately, given where Granger County is, I mean, it is like driving out of the middle of nowhere. I mean, it is.
We just kind of didn't think about bringing cash with us.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't. Yeah, it occurred to me earlier in the morning, maybe I should have some cash just in case. But yeah, I don't think I would have had that much cash. And yeah, that's a little insane. And yeah, it was.
I mean, it was $75 and it's a Case brand knife. It's not insane.
No,
things go for north of 100 easily.
Yeah, exactly.
But the fact of only taking cash was fucked. Because I had to search to try to find who had these damn knives. It was nowhere on the website. And then to not have any kind of signage saying, hey, look, we don't take cards. And, oh, I don't know, maybe could you try having an ATM in the area since it's a fest? I'm not the only one. Foamboy's not the only one, obviously, who didn't think to bring cash with them. You would expect the organizers would be a little more intelligent and well put together, but apparently when you're dealing with backwoods bullshit like that, you get what you get.
Yeah, although I will say that, yeah, speaking of backwards bullshit, one of the conversations we had with one of the farmers, but before we did that, they also had a couple of classic cars there, right? So this was like a Chevy 454, I think, or something. I don't remember what vintage it was, but this is orange thing, and I've got this great picture of it. The guy talked my ear off about this damn thing, and it was, I mean,
he loves old cars. He's proud of his vehicle.
Yeah, he's proud of his vehicle, and I could tell. I mean, I'm not a gearhead, right? I don't know a whole lot about cars, but if I see something that looks like that, yeah, that's pretty good. You know, I like sheet metal and rivets. I like hearing engines like, you know, I like hearing, I'm all of that, you know, but I don't know anything. I don't really know anything about cars. I mean, but I like those old cars, and I actually want to get an old car because, like, new cars suck. They've got too much electronics. They've got too many things that track you like a fucking smartphone. And yeah, give me a, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it's. But yeah, the guys were, yeah, I think we talked to those guys for like 45 minutes, it seems like. I mean, easily. I mean, yeah, yeah, and I guess, but I mean, yeah, so we missed out on some of the stuff, But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, I think the jury's out whether we'll go again, but...
I think if we do go, arguably, like, next year, we'll know to go on the main day of the festival to be able to see all of the special things that they have, and it won't just be, like, a gigantic food and vendor fest, because that's a lot of what it felt like, is, okay, there were a bunch of antique tractors on display. Those were really nice, but it was basically just smelling grease and regret and sugar from every angle, and hotter than shit, no mist tents that were promised.
Yeah, well, there was one, but it was not a very good one. It was a very small one.
I still say that was not a mist tent. I think that was literally just a tent that was, offering shade.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, the point being that,
I think main day
would be better. I got done very quick. It's like, unfortunately, because it was hot, and it really wasn't. That's all it was. But although the last conversation, so we walked around, and they all of these different farmers sell, you know, basically grow their tomatoes. And I mean, the guy we were talking to at the end there that they bought your family bought the tomatoes from. Yeah, he said he lives
and
like
cabbage.
Yeah, and cabbage, right? Yeah, lives like two. You know, basically their farm's only like a couple miles from this is at like an elementary school or something.
Yeah, it's held at the middle school.
Yeah, elementary, middle school, whatever. It's held at a school, and yeah, that's probably the biggest place in that place that you could probably do it. But yeah, I think he was also saying they grow a whole lot more than just vegetables out there.
Uh huh.
Yeah,
and you know, they're still up to no good out in that county, but we don't hold it against them.
No, they're good people out there, actually.
For sure.
I mean, yeah, whoa, what the heck? Yeah,
better than to open a link when I'm on air.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Well, not only that, but yeah, I have a feeling that Cotton Gin is realizing that Isobot needs some help or something, so...
It is all good.
Okay. However, I think we have... Is there any more we want to say about the Tomato Festival?
No, I think we pretty much summed it up. You know, we picked up a few, you know, tchotchkes and things that made me happy, at the very least. I think it was nice to spend the day with my mom and my oldest. I wish my youngest would have accompanied us, especially because it was his birthday, but... He opted not to. It's groovy. And I think we probably should hear what our pedal heads have to say, because...
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321. And so, we asked the question this week, favorite summer festival. And by the way, if y'all want to... if you want to sign, you can, of course... weigh in on that now, but or if you haven't already, but favorite summer festival. Yeah, so not everybody's into it, because Mama here, can you read Mama's text there on the screen?
I can. She says, I don't do festivals, summer or otherwise. That would require going outside and being around people. I well said. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that, truly. Even though we went to the tomato one, I think because it wasn't the main day, it wasn't hella crowded and disgusting like it probably would have been today.
Yeah. So anyway, the point is that we're not. So I don't know, but the point is at least I know what we've gone up there, and yeah, I mean also like the stuff that we would buy up there, especially the volume of tomatoes and stuff. Like yeah, we don't have time to actually like turn that into like canned goods and that kind of thing. So it's not something we can.
No, I had considered getting some to do homemade salsa. I also saw that they had beans. I love the white half runners, and I saw they had those. There was something else too that. The cabbages, because I was contemplating making stuffed cabbage, but then I was real about the fact, like, no, I just truly do not have that degree of time to devote when I have all of this other stuff coming up and I have to work as many hours as possible in order to afford the tuition. Yeah, I have zero time to do anything except for this show and 2.5 Bens and, you know, just live my normal life. That which keeps the shekels flowing in our life, or at least a majority of our life and your life. You know what I mean. Point is, I ain't got fucking time for that shit. But what we do have time for, and what hopefully you will have time for, is to call 253-237-3321 and tell us what your favorite summer festival is. And Mama did. She said, fuck festivals. So we want to hear what this next pedalhead has to say about festivals.
Dude. Dude, I'm experiencing the Lotus Effect. Far out, man. Favorite. I don't have an absolute favorite. I think it'd be kind of weird if you did, but summertime activity. It's kind of like everything, man. Camping, hitting water up. It's pretty hot around here. So hitting water up, just sometimes staying cool, getting some AC, yeah, chilling with the wife, slipped inside with the nibblings a couple weeks ago. That was fun. Yeah, finding water. You got a lake or ocean or river or whatever you got around you. For the first time ever, got parents and brother and sister, mom, my kiddos, their kiddos, and my wife and I, we did got a cabin, the other weekend. That was fun. So, just a lot of good memories with that. Something to look back at. Yeah. I think it's just, being able to get out more later days, which is always nice. Get the barbecue in, just all the things. And honestly, just sometimes doing stuff around the house. Because it's light later. Kind of like, I can, you know, whatever, do some stuff in the garage and whatever stuff is easier. So, yeah. Sweating. Don't like that part. Definitely don't like that part. But especially when you didn't earn it. If you walk outside and you're already sweating, that's just not fun. But that is life. So, at least here. Anyway, that's it. Hope you guys had a wonderful weekend. Well, I'm sure we'll hear about it from last weekend. So, and then I got to check out that new podcast. I already subscribed. I just haven't listened to it yet. So, anyway. All right. I love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not it's a baby shower or it's a baby monsoon, give a hearty hottie. Ka-kaw!
Ka-ka! Baby monsoon.
Right.
I might have to write that. I'm going to write it down at least. He actually, I think he had a follow up here. I think is.
I believe so.
Yeah, because that number showed up again. So here we go.
Just because I went to go repost it on the dong, and then realized it was technically festival, I believe. So the technical answer would probably be like a fair. Actually, just talking about like coworkers and stuff, like state versus county fair and stuff like that, and kind of pros and cons, and kind of actually more into like the county fairs. Like, we'll always try to hit up the state fair if we can, but like something about county fair, they're just like little bit more like organic feeling, I guess, if you will. They're just a little bit more like less commercial, if you will, less polished sort of deal. Kind of feels like the businesses and stuff you're supporting, the vendors and stuff, they're like not just always there at the like fairground or whatever for every event. They're, you know, they're specifically for that thing. So we'll go with the county fair as far as festivals. Yeah. But anyway, love you guys, stay dangerous. And that's I don't know. Shower monsoon. We'll figure it out. Howdy howdy. Cacao!
Ka-ka! Shower. Okay, so we have a baby monsoon and shower monster as potential.
That is so good.
Those are this.
Yeah, that's all we need. I'm not showering ever again. The shower monster is going to get me.
Jesus Christ. All right, we got one more voicemail here from.
No, we didn't know a lot of people love us this week. I'm kind of hurt.
Well, we
get a lot of people calling in talking about their favorite summer festival.
They may not have a favorite summer festival.
Well, they could do like Mama and say forget festivals.
Yeah, they could do that. Oh. Or they could do what this caller did.
Yo, what's up? Sorry I'm late to the party. I came up to the house to work and forgot my phone. Favorite summer fest. Ours is in town. It's towards the end of summer. It's the first weekend in September, I believe. Yeah. And it's a, you know, it's a small town, so it's a good get together, and they do like they let the kids chase a greased pig, and they do, you know, all the normal stuff, cakewalk and egg toss and three-legged race and that kind of stuff, and they have all kinds of food, and they have a street dance, and it's a great goddamn time. That's what it is. That's all it is. It's a great goddamn time. So, yeah. Got the kids a bunch of water balloons, and they're having a grand old time today. Everybody just loving it. Yeah. Okay, bye.
Oh, okay, bye. Yes.
Thanks, weirdo. That actually does sound like fun.
Yeah, Agatoxins, by the way, was a potential show title. We get okay. So while that last voicemail was playing, we got one more. So we're gonna play it.
Do you want to know what the best festival is? Well, I don't even remember the last festival I went to. I don't know. I probably went to like the Lavender Festival or something like that. So no, I don't really do festivals. So I'm gonna just answer with. It's concert season. I don't go to a lot of concerts, but I'm going to go to a concert here in August next month. Super excited. Going to go see Creed and Three Doors Down. And, yeah, you better believe I'll be requesting some of that here at Studio 33.
Yeah, very good. Yes.
Hell, yeah. That sounds like a great time. Hope you have a blast.
Exactly. So, all right. So that.
You know what? I think concert season could be qualify as a festival.
Yeah, I think so.
People wait all year to be able to go to concerts like that.
Exactly.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly. The Summer of Love was a concert. Anyway, so whatever if you are listening right now and you want to weigh in on this, you can call or text 253-237-3321. We will get to that section of the we'll get to that in what we call the last call segment when we get to that part of the script. But right now, I think, honey, I think it's time to get high. What let's get high.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But I do not freebase cocaine.
Oh, and I get to shit on Washington State. We love shitting on Washington State around here because they have a government panel that urges a safe supply model to reduce drug overdose deaths.
But we're winning the war on drugs. We're winning the war on drugs. Grace Lord and Passmarker winning war.
Now, from the because it works so well in Oregon department, a Washington State government working group is renewing its call for officials to take steps toward ensuring a regulated, tested supply of controlled substances to individuals at risk of drug overdoses, pointing to a number of policy options developed in recent years.
Those are our drugs, fuckos!
And a member said in a report that the goals of the safe supply reform are to ensure substances are as safe as possible to consume and to minimize peripheral harms from drug contamination and incarceration. Changes would also aim to reduce theft, petty crime, and syringe litter often associated with illicit drug activity.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
Now, the work group presented its safe supply recommendation at a meeting last month, according to the Center Square, but the proposal itself is not new. The State Substance Use Recovery Services Advisory Committee, or SURSAC, SURSAC a shit sounds like, created through a 2021 law, recommended the following year that lawmakers decriminalize the possession of controlled substances, and the body has expressed broad support to establish a system to provide safe supply services, the recommendation report notes.
How do you get a job here, you fuckface?
Now, four different state supply frameworks were recommended at the 2022 SURSAC special meeting, including prescription and supervised consumption, prescription and self-administration, a dispensary model, and a community-based buyer's club. Oh, God. Now, Republican lawmaker Representative Travis Couture told the Center Square that he opposes the state taking a role in the safe supply effort, adding that SURSAC seems uninterested in considering other approaches.
No.
Much like Democrats, they only want to double down on the failures, he said. And that's what we're talking about here is taxpayer-funded drug dealing, where the state would hand out heroin, fentanyl, and meth on our dime. That's not treatment, Couture said. That's surrender, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I think it's fucking disgusting that states are broke enough as it is, and you got asshole groups like this wanting to be like, hey, we got a bunch of fucking drug addicts, and we want to make sure that they're getting clean drugs and not laced drugs, and, well, you fine fuckers are going to pay for it. Well, no, dumbass, they're not. It blows my mind. Like, this... Some of these drugs are still fucking illegal, are they not? And yet this group is like, let's make sure they get the good stuff. Are you shitting?
Yeah, I know. Kidding. It just doesn't. This doesn't make any sense, people. Although this next story makes sense.
This next story makes a lot of sense because marijuana use is tied to significantly higher sexual desire and arousal, according to a new study.
Smoke weed every day.
Yes! Yes! Oh! Yes! 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 Oh! 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 Oh, God. Oh.
Now, the study, a doctoral thesis out of Queen's University in Canada, includes two separate studies, an online survey of 1,547 cannabis users, as well as a 28-day diary analysis of 115 individuals, 87 of whom were marijuana users, while 28 were infrequent users or non-users.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
More frequent cannabis use was linked with greater daily sexual desire, wrote author Kayla M. Mooney. On sexually active days, participants reported significantly higher sexual desire and arousal on days they used cannabis versus days that they didn't.
I'll cradle the balls, stroke the shaft, work the pipe, swallow the grating. Get it over here, buddy. Let's do this.
Across all study days, regardless of sexual activity, participants reported significantly higher sexual desire and lower sexual distress on days they used cannabis compared to days they didn't, according to the study. Now, it also continued stating that noting the findings could help inform both sex therapy and general psychotherapy. I can agree with that. As for the online survey, approximately half of the sample reported sexual motivations for cannabis use, most commonly to enhance aspects of the sexual response, according to the abstract. The new report, which itself calls the relationship between cannabis and sexual functioning complicated, adds to a growing body of research about the subject.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Doesn't seem too complicated to us, but I mean, what do we know? If you've got a healthy relationship, you don't need weed for it to be mind-blowing sex. But anyway, a broad scientific review of academic research on cannabis and human sexuality published last year concluded that while the relationship between marijuana and sex is a complicated one, use of cannabis is generally associated with more frequent sexual activity as well as increased sexual desire and enjoyment.
You have insatiable sexual desires.
What I find interesting is, and I'm not sure if you remember this, phone boy, I know there have been studies that actually contradicted this one heavily, stating that using marijuana decreases the pleasure of sex and things like that. Because I remember us joking about how wrong they were.
Yeah, at least in our experience. I mean,
Pedalheads, feel free to weigh in. If you've ever gotten stoned and then gotten naughty with your partner, like, has it been better than it usually would for any reason? I mean, let us know. I can say,
yeah. 253-237-3321. We want to hear all the sexual. Anyway, no, we don't want to hear all the
You're
details.
You're so horrible. That's the after party.
No, we don't. But I think
at Studio 69.
Exactly. Okay. Meanwhile, I think
the use of celibacy decreases the enjoyment of sex.
Yes, exactly.
Better words never spoken.
All right. Anyway, I think we need to turn it off and on again.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
Okay, this one's a little...
I want to credit Dame Jennifer Wieda for this particular story. As bizarre as it is, y'all are going to love it.
Yes. So China mind controls bees with the world's lightest brain chip for spying and rescue ops.
Them buzzy fuckers.
Oh yeah, a team of scientists at the Beijing Institute of Technology has developed the world's lightest insect brain controller. The device weighs a tiny 74 milligrams, making it lighter than a sack of nectar typically carried by a bee. The device weighs a tiny 74 milligrams. Yeah, because the team behind the new development believes fleets of mind-controlled insects could scout areas and help disaster relief operations, according to a report from South China Morning Post.
Swarm is my master. I am a worker. I work for Swarm.
Yeah, worker bees typically carry nectar sacs weighing roughly 80% of their body mass. When in the air, they tuck their hind legs to reduce drag. Now, in a bid to harness the incredible efficiency of natural selection, a team from the Beijing Institute of Technology, led by Professor Zhao Zhilang, developed a system that wires right into the insect's brain. So that's...
Now, I have a question. Was it 74 kilograms or milligrams?
Milligrams.
Okay, I just want to clarify.
Yes. The device is strapped to a bee's back. The needles pierce the bee's brain in electronic pulses, then command it to fly in specific directions. And during the test, the bees obeyed these commands 90% of the time.
You will obey.
Now, prior to this new advancement, the lightest cyborg controller developed in Singapore was triple the weight. That device could command beetles and roaches. However, the extra weight meant that they became tired quickly. Now, with their more lightweight device, the team from China believes its system could allow mind-controlled bees to serve as military scouts. The team published their finding in a paper published on June 11th in the Chinese Journal of Mechanical Engineering. Now, while the technology could be used for good, it raises plenty of concerns over the potential for a new type of surveillance state where every insect is potentially a spy.
You are being watched. The government has a secret system, a machine that spies on you every hour of every day.
All right, I'm going to weigh in on this because this is really pissing me off. I'm serious. What happens to these bees after the fact? Because here's the thing. Bees don't have a long life cycle to begin with. And these crazy fucking dipshits in China are piercing their fucking brains so they can mind control the little shits to fly this way and that to be like little spies. They're gonna put little cameras on them. What the fuck is wrong with these people? I mean, we know what is wrong with them, but what the fuck is wrong with them? That we have enough problems trying to keep our honeybees alive, and now you assholes want to mind control them? That's fucked. So is the fact that board didn't just fire, but that's okay.
Yeah,
oh, no, my God.
What is going on with that?
I don't know, but it kind of felt like it froze.
I know what the issue was. I know what the issue was.
Did you mute it?
Fuck you!
We were on the wrong board, that's why.
I see. Yeah, because... Well, that's what I have to say to these fuckers mind-controlling the bees.
Yes.
Stop harming the bees.
Okay, meanwhile...
We need the bees.
Meanwhile, we want to shoot the mosquitoes down with motherfucking lasers.
Hold on. Meanwhile, Phone Boy doesn't have a mute button off, but we're going to talk about this iron dome for mosquitoes that shoot down bugs with lasers. Pew! 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 You can now order... This is mine, sir.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yes, I just had a rant about the other one.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Because you can now order an iron dome for mosquitoes. Its name is the Photon Matrix, a black box about the size of a smartphone that can detect, track, and eliminate mosquitoes mid-flight using an AI-guided laser system. According to its inventor, it can identify and zap up to 30 mosquitoes per second with calibrated laser pulses that will disintegrate these potentially lethal and always annoying flying pests without harming people or pets. Just looking at the video of it in action makes me laugh like a supervillain.
Kills bugs dead.
Chinese engineer Jim Wong built a working prototype that can effectively identify and strike mosquitoes with a flight speed of no more than 1 meter per second and a characteristic size of 2 to 20 millimeters, according to his Indiegogo crowdfunding page and the viral videos on TikTok and Instagram. The device can also target other flying insects within that range, like sand fleas and fruit flies, basically anything small, slow, and infuriating that you may want to vaporize.
You know, I have one simple request, and that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads.
The timing couldn't be better. Due to climate change, virus-carrying species like those that transmit Zika. Anyway, we should have pulled that clip, but anyway. And dengue are creeping into non-tropical latitudes. The United States, Europe, and other areas outside of the tropics are facing a growing threat. Take Europe. In 2024, the hottest year on record, the European Union documented more than 300 auto... What?
I don't know. Yeah, Basically, something that comes through mosquitoes, right?
Yeah, it's dengue cases. But seriously, like CH and TH do not belong together. That's either a typo or somebody went completely Tourette's on their keyboard when typing that word.
Either way,
it documented more than 300 dengue cases acquired within the European territory, surpassing the 275 cases recorded during the previous 15 years combined.
We're all gonna die!
The crowdfunding campaign for this device seeks $20,000, which it has far exceeded, at more than $758,000 right now, with a pre-sale pricing of $497 for the basic version and $598 for the professional model. The usual Indiegogo Kickstarter might never reach market, caveat applies. Wong acknowledges that price is the system's biggest problem. The production and selling costs of this product are relatively high, he says, and the only way to solve it is by manufacturing scale. He says that third parties have already approached him to build the photon matrix in large numbers. The big question is, of course, will it really work? If the videos are true, then one day we could see them at much lower prices.
Yeah, and monkeys might fly out of my butt.
But I'm not going to lie, if the thing actually does come to market and we could afford one, that thing is going to replace the fucking old school bug zapper. Because who doesn't want to sit on their porch and watch laser lights pew, 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 fucking wiping them buzzy fuckers out? I'm telling you, I would buy one of these devices.
Yeah, so would I. I think that's, I know. We'll see when that comes up. But meanwhile, I think it's time to root around in the junk drawer. What do you think?
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Okay.
I just want to point out, I love this story.
Yeah, this is one of those stories I pulled from L. Reg, and it pissed me off. But putty.org has nothing to do with putty and is now spouting pandemic piffle.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Now, for those of us who are dudes named Ben, right, and having to use things on a command line, we're familiar with PuTTY. It's a well-known SSH client by Simon Tatham, a software engineer and free software author in Cambridge, UK, as he describes himself. Now, PuTTY's been around for a very long time, and it goes back to at least 2008. Probably, I think it actually goes back further than that, if I remember, because I've been using it since the 2000s. And it'll say the oldest release described in the change history on its homepage is version 0.45, which was released in 1999 on January 22nd. Now the issue began because the homepage for PuTTY is a URL. I'm going to actually read it out, and so it's https://www.chiark.greenend.org.uk/tildeshtatham/putty.
I hope you're all taking notes because there's going to be a short quiz next period.
Now, the thing is that these days, many people to expect a well-known software would have a short, simple URL, such as, in this case, putty.org. For instance, Lithuanian hosting company Hostinger links to putty.org when distributing SSH. It's mentioned in answers on Stack Exchange, and putty.org is the first hit on Bing, only followed by the author's own site. However, putty.org has absolutely nothing to do with PuTTY or Simon Tatham.
What?
In fact, it's owned and run by Bitwise, the vendor of a proprietary SSH software for Windows, including a paid server and a free client. Now, this is not a case of typo squatting. Bitwise owns putty.org and has since 2008, when it first looked like a simple, mostly text page with pointers to the FOSS PuTTY SSH client, and only after that to Bitwise's own freeware SSH client and server. Before Bitwise, putty.org belonged to an American web consultancy of the same name.
Me, I would do first.
You register the domain first, you've got it. And using a .org domain like this is inactively misleading. And the company did link to the real PuTTY site, and it did so before its own products. The number of sites linking to PuTTY.org show that this causes genuine confusion, but it's cheap advertising.
We don't care. We don't have to.
There's nothing deceptive there, right? That's always the way it's been. It's no big deal. Now, some douchebag blogger then contacted them to ask about it. And it seems they objected to this. And initially it added a line below its FAQ, which reads, on July 13th, 2025, Bitwise was contacted by a political interrogator posing as a journalist while producing the exchange online. Now, L. Reg claimed they weren't linking to it because it could potentially compromise the individual's safety.
Right.
Yeah. Earlier this week, Putty.org didn't link to Bitwise's own software, and instead it embedded a video by COVID denialist and anti-vaccination activist retired pharmacologist Michael Yeadon, which the L. Reg author also made a point of saying the Reg Foss desk has a degree in biology and has studied viral reproduction. He can attest that viruses are entirely real and vaccines help prevent humans and animals from becoming ill due to viral infection.
Oh, God, here we go with this shit again.
Yeah, there's a lot of just kind of rantiness about all of this. And it says, when I went to go check putty.org, for this story, right, it had reverted back to the links to Putty as well as to the Bitwise SSH client and server. Now, if it's clear, it's clear someone pissed in the cornflakes of those folks at LREG, because we can't have somebody not propagate the approved propaganda, especially if it's someone who helps people find a tool many people in the cybersecurity use or IT in general, that Putty SSH client. They're freaking out that this guy's not on board. Well, guess what? Not everybody's on board with your shit. If you don't like it, fuck off.
Stick to journalism and tech, assholes.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I do know Putty because I had to use it during my class last semester, and I got quite familiar with it. It was really helpful when the system was acting like a prick, although it itself acted up terribly occasionally and took forever to load. But anyway, I love that story. And this story actually was handpicked for me when it came up. Phoneboy literally said, you are doing everything on this story. You are doing the cut paste. You are doing the clippage. This is your story. This is your baby. And he is right, because we talk about the fact they're saying the quiet parts out loud. Well, this is just another example of that, because the CIA has revealed more of its connections to Lee Harvey Oswald.
We all want to know about Kennedy's head. Kennedy's head, Kennedy's head, shot by the government through the head, not by Lee Oswald like they said.
So for more than 60 years, the CIA claimed it had little or no knowledge of Lee Harvey Oswald's activities before the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in November of 1963. Well, that wasn't true. New documents unearthed by a House task force prove that fact.
Well, no shit.
The revelation adds fuel to the long simmering questions around what the agency knew about the plot to murder the president and what else it may be hiding. The documents confirm that George Gennadis, a CIA officer based in Miami in 63, was helping finance and oversee a group of Cuban students opposed to the ascension of Fidel Castro. Gennadis had a covert assignment to manage anti-Castro propaganda and disrupt pro-Castro groups, even as the CIA was prohibited from domestic spying. The CIA-backed group, known as DRE, was aware of Oswald as he publicly promoted a pro-Castro policy for the U.S., and its members physically clashed with him 3 months before the assassination. And then a DRE member said Oswald approached them and offered his help, possibly to work as a mole within his pro-Castro group, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. The CIA had long denied any involvement with the Cuban group or any awareness of Oswald's pro-Cuba advocacy. After the most recent release of documents, the agency didn't respond to a request for comment.
I know nothing. Nothing.
The House Oversight Committee created a task force on federal secrets to revisit the executive orders by President Trump in both of his administrations requiring the release of assassination files by government agencies. After the task force held hearings on the JFK assassination this spring, Chairwoman Ana Paulina Luna, the Republican from Florida, led a push for the CIA to revisit its archives, which produced some significant discoveries, including new details about Gennadis's, who had previously only been identified with the alias of Howard. That's the name members of the DRE in Miami had for the CIA contract they kept apprised of their actions. But the CIA informed both the Warren Commission in 64 and the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 78 that Howard didn't exist. In 1998, after the formation of the Assassination Records Review Board, the CIA again said it had no records related to Howard, and the name may have been, quote, nothing more than a routing indicator.
How can they just lie like that?
Documents from Joannatis's CIA personnel file were released earlier this month showing he had obtained a phony DC driver's license. The name on it, Howard Mark Gebler. This confirms most of what the public already speculated, that the CIA was lying to the American people and that there was a cover-up, Luna said in an email.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
The documents also show the CIA gave Joannatis a Career Commendation Medal in 81, in part for his handling of the Cuban group and also for his role as a liaison to the House Assassinations Committee, in which researchers have said that Joannatis stonewalled them when they dug deeper into CIA files. The commendation noted his assignment as deputy chief of the psychological warfare branch in Miami in 1962 and said he did particularly well with the handling of exile student and teacher groups. It's a breakthrough, and there's more to come, said Jefferson Morley, a longtime JFK researcher and former Washington Post reporter, who first sued the CIA for their assassination files in 2003. The burden of proof has shifted. There's a story here that's been hidden and avoided, and now it needs to be explored. It's up to the government to explain.
You got some splaining to do.
There's no indication that any of the files at the CIA was involved in the assassination of Kennedy, which the Warren Commission declared in 64 was the work of Oswald as a lone gunman. The House, in 76, launched a select committee to investigate the assassinations of Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr., and concluded that Oswald worked as part of a probable conspiracy, but they could not determine who else was in the conspiracy. Staff members for the committee have said they were making progress on unearthing documents from the CIA in 1978 until a new agency liaison was installed. That's right, Joannatis, whom they had no idea was at the center of what they were trying to uncover. Joannatis began to change the way file access was handled. Committee staff member Dan Hardaway testified before Luna's task force in May. The obstruction of our efforts by Joannatis escalated over the summer of 1978. It was clear that the CIA had begun to work or to carefully review files before delivering them to us for review. After the movie JFK was launched, new questions about the slaying, Congress in 1994 created the Assassination Records Review Board, which again tried to recover key documents from federal agencies and again probed the CIA. They responded with a memo about Howard saying he didn't exist. Previously released records show that the CIA had begun reading Oswald's mail in 59 when he defected from the Soviet Union, a move that attracted American media attention. He returned to the U.S. in 62 with a new wife and daughter in tow and settled in Dallas. Now, Mortley has found that the CIA continued to monitor Oswald. At least 35 CIA employees handled reports on him between 59 and 63, including a half dozen officers who reported personally to counterintelligence chief James Angleton or deputy director Richard Helms. The files included State Department and FBI reports about his defection and his activities with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, a pro-Castro group in the U.S. When Oswald publicized his involvement in the pro-Castro group, the DRA swung into action and confronted him on the streets in New Orleans, leading to a brief altercation and police involvement. Now, was Oswald secretly offering to spy on Fairplay for Cuba, something the CIA had other operatives doing? Well, Lanuzzo thinks so, but the DRE didn't follow up with Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald was trying to get in the good graces of the CIA, Lanuzzo said. He said, I'll do whatever. But when the news hit that he'd been arrested 3 months later, Lanuzzo and Rocha, these are other members of the Pro-Castro group, they called Howard. Now, Lanuzzo said Howard told him to call the FBI and prove the letter and then alert the media to Oswald's pro-Cuba leanings. The FBI came and took Oswald's letter with the promise to return it, but they never did. Now, Lanuzzo then phoned his contacts in the news media, who promptly added Oswald's political leanings to their coverage. The Fair Play for Cuba Committee soon imploded from its association with Oswald, a massive victory for the CIA and for Howard.
Yay!
Morley and other researchers always suspected Howard was John Adairs, who died in 1990, but it wasn't confirmed till the driver's license documents were released July 3rd. Why couldn't they say that before 2025? I think the only reason is there's something nefarious going on. If it's something innocent, just say that's what happened. Now, Oswald said, I'm a patsy, when speaking to journalists in Dallas police headquarters after he was arrested, and many disbelieved the Warren Commission's conclusion that he was the lone gunman. He really wasn't alone. He had the CIA looking over his shoulder for 4 years, Morley said. Now, Ralph Mowat Larson, a former CIA counterintelligence officer who has delved deeply into the case, said, this looks a hell of a lot like a CIA operation.
Coincidence? I think not!
Because it is. It was. And it always will be. Propagated by our government. But anyway, he said a plausible theory was rogue CIA officers created the conspiracy to assassinate Kennedy, unknown to the agency, and that the CIA covered it up not because they were involved, but because they were trying to hide the secrets of that period. He said many in the CIA were angry with Kennedy after he withdrew support for the agency's Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in 1961, as well as for his gradual move toward peace with the Soviet Union after the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. The question is, what was John Adairs doing for the CIA monitoring Oswald? Well, Mowat Larson said these people who were orchestrating this had access to John Adairs' reporting. They used that to monitor Oswald. His bona fides are being set up to be the lone gunman, a cover story for other shooters.
How convenient.
How convenient. You know, don't look over here. Don't pay attention to what's really going on. Put it all on this guy. That's why he said he was a patsy. Now, we're getting closer to the truth about Oswald in the CIA, but I do think there's more to come, said senior U.S. District Judge John Tonheim of Minneapolis, who chaired the Assassination Review Board in the 90s. The John Adairs closures are more important, I think. Tonheim said he didn't see any CIA complicity at this point. I see hiding information to avoid embarrassing questions, information that proves past lies. He noted that Congress passed the JFK Records Act in 1992. Where are Howard's monthly reports and progress reports? Howard's files must exist, probably apart from John Adairs' files. Now, Luna agreed with Mowat Larson that there was a rogue element that operated within the CIA outside the purview of Congress and the federal government that knowingly engaged in a cover-up of the JFK assassination.
I didn't do it. Nobody saw me do it. There's no way they can prove anything.
I believe this rogue element intentionally turned a blind eye to the individuals that orchestrated it, to which they had direct connections. I think this rogue element within the CIA looked at JFK as a radical. They didn't like his foreign policy, and that's why just justifying turning a blind eye to his assassination and those involved. Period. Dot. It's easy to see. This proves the government did it. They knew about it. They covered it up. Fight me on it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, there's a reason I said, yeah, you need to do this story, because this, I, I don't have you say you're more into this than I am, and yeah, I don't doubt.
I have been on this for years. It's much like the Epstein didn't hang himself thing. JFK was not shot by a lone gunman, and it was not Lee Harvey Oswald alone. If he did it, he was not alone. I have contested that. I will continue to contest it, and that report proves the fact. They were not happy with him. They didn't like what he was doing, and they knew that he was not going to allow them to get into the Vietnam conflict, the police action, and that's why they took him out, period, dot. There's plenty of people who also believe that. I'm not just a lone conspiracist.
All right, well, I think it's time for the last call. We've got some last calls this week.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh, God.
And we actually do have some last calls this week because we did get a couple more voicemails.
Howdy, y'all. I don't really have a favorite summer festival. I'm not very good with heat, not very good with crowds, mixed crowds and heat, and it's a big old mess. And what's the psychos have that? But, yeah, I wanted to call in and let you know because I don't want you guys to feel unloved. I love you guys so much. So does Benji. Talk to you later. Bye.
Aw, thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Yes,
you're the best. Yes. We love you too.
We love you. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. All right. Now we got one more here. And I think this is more germane to something that we had discussed earlier. Why?
Yes, one of our stories, actually.
Yes, we did. And for whatever reason, it is still okay. We're going to do that, and we're going to do that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, to the question about does cannabis use increase sexual pleasure and or desire? Yes, 100%. At least for me and my house, we almost always smoke before we hop in the sack together. It's I don't know. I feel like it very much increases all aspects of the sexual experience. Now, alcohol make you naughty. Alcohol make you do weird shit that you didn't think you would do any other time. So you got to be careful with the alcohol stuff. You might. I got a joke for you. How is a 9-volt battery like a chick's butt? You know you shouldn't, but you're going to put your tongue on it. Okay, bye.
Jesus Christ.
Well done, weirdo. Damn it. That's probably the worst, best joke I've heard lately.
Yeah.
But see, I'm glad that another pedalhead actually had the bravery to say it. Yeah, weed makes sex better. And if your sex is already fucking amazing, weed just makes it extra super amazing.
Yeah, I can assure you that this is the case. Speaking as somebody with the kind of sex life that people lie about having, we actually have it. So meanwhile, let's go on to the Windows 11 and their new black screen of death. It's now rolling out.
Oh, that sound triggers me.
It's now so Microsoft is now starting to change its blue screen of death, otherwise known as a BSOD, to a newly designed black version. It's the first major change to the BSOD since Microsoft added a sad face to the screen in Windows 8. And Microsoft is now removing that frowning face and QR code in favor of a more simplified black screen.
Who the fuck cares?
I have a question.
It's still a BSOD, by the way. I just thought I'd point that out.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, the acronym still applies. But here's my question. Do you think it's an inclusion move? Black Dong of Death. You know what? That is a really great way to describe that because the dong sound like that's...
That got written.
I'm having mental images of Black Dong of Death. You hear that sound and you're totally fucked.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Yes, I have a feel. I've written that down on the show titles list, so I think that...
I think that might be a front-running contender.
I think that is... Yeah, I think that is absolutely. So let's go on to the... So we have three more last call stories here.
I absolutely love this story, and because it's local, it makes it even better. Because an FBI agent has been arrested for DUI in Knoxville.
Book him, Dano.
I'm pretty fucking drunk.
F- FBI agent Mark J. Stevenson, 40, was charged with DUI, resisting arrest, and leaving the scene of an accident after crashing his Ford F-150 in Knoxville on Sunday night. A deputy responded to the incident on Trout Road around 11:35, noting Stevenson smelled strongly of alcohol. I'm sorry, you guys. That, even if it was just me that story gave a little thrill and a tickle to, I want to see the cop cam video of that arrest. Please, universe, Radical, whoever, make this happen. I want to see this arrest because as an FBI agent, you're getting hooked up for DUI and you do resisting and you fled. Bro, just the thought there, Skippy. You realize that's a felony to flee the scene of an accident. I don't know if you're aware of that there, Mr. FBI agent, or should I say former FBI agent, because I'm pretty fucking sure the agency is not going to take kindly to your actions, sir. Way to fuck your career, bro.
All right, so I think this is going to be a day wrecker for legendary rock star who could spend more than a decade in prison. It's a miracle. Yeah, Roger Waters, who sang that last the clip there, is facing possible prosecution after pledging support for the Palestine Action, a group that has been deemed a terrorist organization by the United Kingdom.
Oh, you're going to jail!
Yeah, so the United Kingdom banned Palestine Action under its anti-terrorism laws last week after its members broke into the Royal Air Force base and damaged planes in protest of Britain's support of Israel. Well, you get what you get, Roger Waters. That's all I have to say about that. And you probably have a lot more to say about this next story, honey, because, yeah.
Well, of course I do. I'm pretty sure that I've mentioned it before. You all know that I love the paranormal. And there's a part of me that really feels like this was a FAFO situation because paranormal investigator Dan Rivera is dead at 54 while on the Annabelle Haunted Doll tour.
That's how you know you fucked up.
Paranormal investigator Dan Rivera died suddenly while showcasing the famous Annabelle doll that has inspired several entries in the Conjuring franchise.
He was an American. Now he is dead.
Rivera, 54, a senior lead investigator for the Connecticut-based New England Society for Psychic Research, died on Sunday, July 13th, during his visit to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, as part of the company's Devils on the Run tour.
I mean, I've been told to go to hell so many times, I think it's finally time to check it out.
Yeah. And I hope he is enjoying his time in hell, because I have very strong feelings. Having come from Connecticut, been interested in the paranormal for pretty much most of my life due to experiences, and being very invested in Ed and Lorraine Warren's work, the fact that they owned that doll and left specific instructions for it never, ever striking a million exclamation points ever to let it out of its case. And this dumb fuck took this doll on tour around the country or the world or whatever. The problem of which is, in several of these stops, people have died. There is not a coincidence. This doll is truly the second coming of evil and should never have been taken out of her case. I think this guy got exactly what the fuck he deserved. And I don't care who hears me say it.
All right. Well, on that note,
well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, we gotta go. We gotta go to Studio 33 and go play.
Yeah, because people are already flooding us with requests.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna have to go through the chat here and do that. But I think, you know what?
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game!
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.